those questions go deeper and deeper and deeper. So I always start with what everybody has common before I get to what kind of niche do I want to focus on. And I advise that for new advisors, you know, once you kind of been in the game a little while, you know, referrals take over and all this other kind of stuff. And so you don't have to focus that hard on that. But specifically the type of people I like to serve in DDH Capital Management, and I say this very unashamedly, is people that value their time over money. That's how I'm wired. I always believe that I can replace money, but I cannot replace time. So if I get somebody that on the first call, they're asking me about, what do you think about the market? And I'm like, look, I don't, that's not the type of advisor I am. I've lived that life. I just don't enjoy providing that for clients. There are plenty of advisors that do that, but I really want to focus on people that are trying to make impact and leave legacy. And so those people tend to fit a psychographic of wanting to put leverage in their life by using advice in seeking perspective that they don't otherwise have or have the time to go figure out. So that's kind of my ideal client. And the way I track them, to be quite honestly, is just, you know, be in their head. Like I've done a lot of research on the way they act and situational things. I started with medical device and pharmaceutical biotech and just kind of built from there. Knowing that a lot of these people pre-COVID, just to give you an example, traveled 75% of the time. They didn't have time to be looking at this stuff and 401k choices. So a trusted advisor that can make help them make the bigger, better decision, like you read about at the beginning in the bio, was what they wanted. That's what they valued. And so that's what I played to. And I think it's, you know, you when in Rome, you do as the Romans, right? Like as an advisor, you got to kind of do that without sacrificing who you are. From an integrity standpoint or an ethics standpoint, but that's what you have to do when you're going to serve your clients. It's almost like a certain point of Dominique I put on in order to know what they're thinking and how they're going to react and what next steps they want to take and what questions they're asking to get them to buy into the way I do it. Because there's, you know, what, 350,000 people calling themselves financial advisors. They got a lot of choices out there. So how do you attract them? Yeah, well, I mean, it probably is. I mean, if you include like insurance agents and all that kind of stuff. So yeah.
Yeah, bankers.
Yeah. But so yeah, that's kind of the way that I approach client acquisition, new client acquisition. I've been really blessed. You know, the pandemic has handed me a lot of clients that have found me like on websites and old videos and stuff like that. So I haven't had to do a lot of marketing in the last 2 years or so.
Well, I think that at the very beginning of any startup company, you're always going to have that initial timeframe to attract clients. And I think that over time, the referrals just kind of take over, or the foundation of your marketing, such as the videos that you mentioned, kind of take over on the autopilot mode, if you will, for that.
Yeah.
So thank you so much for that. And I think that the conversation that oftentimes people need to really think about is, what language do you speak? I'm not talking about different countries' language. I'm talking about from a professional perspective. Your language, how you speak to it, will attract a certain type of clients to you because they understand what you're talking about. And like your example of pharmaceutical and these high-tech type of executives, obviously you speak their language. They understand you. And so I think that's important. That's a lot of internalization to go through. People need to spend time to actually think about that before they say, I just wanted to work with retirees. But what type of retirees, right? There are so many different types. So thank you so much for sharing that.
If I can add, let me, I think you bring up a point that I think needs to be highlighted here because a lot of this audience will likely go into the field as an employee somewhere versus the 1% of people that actually start their own shingle and the 80% of those that fail. The nuance here that I specifically teach in Jumpstart is just because you're not hanging your own shingle does not mean you don't need to know what you just said, which is how this whole thing works, how marketing attracts the client, how the sales process needs to occur in order for them to become a client, and then the service follow up. If those first two things don't happen, no clients come through the door. Exactly. There are no financial plans to write. So appreciate that process. And when you come into an organization, understand that. I often tell, you know, the community members, if you sit down with someone's ADV before an interview, figure out the type of client they work with and ask questions around how do they attract them, ask questions around who, first of all, who is your ideal client? How do you attract them? What are some of the challenges you're finding in attracting them? You're going to be different than 99% of people that are doing interviews because you understand how the lifeblood of the firm works. Clients got to come in the door. So I'm very glad you brought that up, because having an understanding of that from an employee standpoint is huge, is super huge.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that sometimes that even as an employee, we all always have to remember, regardless about what role you play, this is a service industry. Your selling skill in the service industry is so vastly different compared to selling a product. Not to discredit the insurance folks, but they are commodity products, right? It's a different selling skill set, if you will. Not that they're not good. It's just that it's a different approach, a different way of talking to the clients, a different way of digging down deeper about what the client's challenges is, right? And then able to help or not help that particular client. So thank you so much for going a little bit deeper on that. So this next question is really interesting regarding about message getting across to the clients about effective ways. Can you share some ways that you are able to get the message across to the clients? I think that there's an inherent problem with these questions, but I'm going to let you talk about it.
There's a couple of different ways I'm going this, and I think I'm gonna again think about the audience in the most probably tactile or tangible way for them, or at least most valuable. I would say let's talk platforms versus nuances, because nuances in communication, active listening, some of the stuff you need to know about how our brains work, that could take a while to develop. Especially for probably the age group that we're talking about. But I often tell people, I'm like, look, I know you want to work in financial services. This is just a little sidebar. I know you want to work in financial services, but if you do an internship and, you know, if you're Gen Z, like I think you are, this is native. This is back of your hand. You can really come in and help an advisor that's aging or serves an aging book get on some of the platforms that his ideal client may be hanging out on. So utilize those skills. And so in a very practical sense, an effective way is social media, right? So let's kind of park there for a minute. But it still boggles my mind why in 2022, there are so still little advisors, relatively speaking, across the space that are utilizing video, like fully leveraging the power of video. I have heard over and over from prospective clients is the reason why I went with you opposed to these other people is because I got to watch 30 or 40 or an hour of your videos. And I felt like I knew you before this call. So it's not as great as being in person, but look at the environment we're in now. Everybody doesn't want to be in person. So mastering the skill of video is a worthwhile investment, whether you're doing selfies on your phone and reversing it so you can get the best view on that back camera for iPhone users. Or if you're practicing looking into the camera and using your hands and, you know, not just being this, you know, toad on the log type of deal, like all those things are really, really powerful. Cause like I can count on two hands how many in-person meetings I've had in the 5 years that I've ran my business, almost six. I do it all virtual, basically. And that is the expectation. So effective ways. yeah. The effective ways of like when we talk about the planning profession going forward, this is something people need to get used to. Like they really just need to. And if you can master this skill and seamlessly integrate it, that's the key. Seamlessly integrate it into the workflow and the experience that the client is paying you for. Oh yes, that's a top skill. And that will be probably one of the more effective ways. I don't know many clients in this environment that are like, yeah, I'd rather meet in person than virtually. That I'm just not hearing that. Well, not plus, in my firm and not have, across firms. Yeah.
Yeah. Plus you have all these videos available for them to sample. So of course they're going to be feeling like they already know you before they meet you. And they get to see, and again, that's where I mentioned the language you speak match what they are, you know, what they're speaking. And that's almost like a self-selecting. I think clients are very smart. I always tell my students or anyone I coach, clients are very smart. They're extremely smart. They pick you for a reason. And if you give them that available channel, such as video available to them, they are going to take advantage of that, making sure that when they are in front of you in the meeting, in the videos, they are prepared to speak with you. So thank you so much for emphasizing that video is just one of the way that is currently effective working with client, and that will change. Maybe hologram is coming, and I know it's here, that we have to adapt and change, and we have to meet where a client is, if you will. So thank you.
Let me throw this in because you make a very interesting point in that video is the let's call it medium du jour. Definitely. I think the adaptability of knowing what medium works for your client base, because if I'm talking about I serve all baby boomers, that might not be the case. They might still want to meet in person, right? So, you know, your client makeup has to do with that too, your client demographic. What I would also underline is some of the things that, you know, I kind of hesitated and hedged on at the beginning of this question, which was, is really just a bedside matter of how you treat your clients. Like I've always told, I have three adult children. I've always told them that the pure definition of frustration is going to be the difference between expectation and what actually happens. So if your client comes in the door, a prospective client comes in the door and they expect one thing and you deliver something else, maybe really lack of communication, because it's all on you at that standpoint, because they're just coming in the door. You have all of the latitude to let them know this is how it's going to be, what you can expect. If they leave you or they're frustrated or the service level is not there, that's on you, right? So we have all the propensity to kind of set the direction of where that can go. And all I'm saying is, like, do that up front and you will see the fruit of that. If you don't, you're also going to probably get the negative consequences of that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Setting those expectations absolutely does make a big difference there.
Yeah.
Now we do know that there are obviously 300 some plus universities that has undergraduate program in financial planning, either major or minor. So we have a lot of people going through the financial planning as a study. So we do know that there are quite a bit of folks coming through. But what are some of the ways that you do see the next generation financial professionals? How could we better prepare them into the industry, if you will? Because what you learn in the classroom might be one thing, but what you are out there servicing clients might be another thing. Could you talk a little bit about, so how do we best prepare them?
Yeah, this is a really great question. So I have a framework that I talk about, very similar to a mutual friend of ours. She talks about the continuum of financial care. I expanded that thought because I'm like looking at it from both ends of the perspective, from consumers of financial services as well as providers of financial services. And I would say, like, let's just use an analogy. Let's say there's 15 steps from financial, you know, illiteracy to economic empowerment. Our industry has been notoriously, you know, concentrating on the first, you know, or the last rather, two or three steps, because that's where all the wealth is. Right? That's where the fees are made. But the majority of America, you know, is in the first 13 steps, first 12 steps. And so I think the first aha is for first takeaway for this audience is probably to realize that that continuum exists and clients are going to want to intersect you where they are. And so you can choose whether you want to be a financial educator, counselor, coach, advisor, planner, therapist, you know, there's a lot of seats to fill depending on where the client is and how you integrate those different aspects. Because here's the other nuance. They can be interchanged as nouns or verbs, right? So for instance, I kind of think that the next evolution of this industry, which is already happening, there's a more of a marriage and integration of financial coaching as a verb with financial advice. Because people just don't need you. Like you said, it's commoditized. Investment management is commoditized. Like nobody needs me to manage their money, really. I mean, I know there's advisors that go and say this is a value proposition, but it's just not. It's just not anymore. Right. There's study after study that proves that. What clients really come to you when they say they want you to manage their money is they want you to help them make better decisions. That's what they're saying. And they want to use their money in the financial capital that they exchange for human capital to do that because they realize the essence of time in relation to whatever constraint or goal that they're trying to meet. That's what they're really saying. You have to understand that because they're going to come in there and say, I want you to manage my money. So that's the kind of stuff that like we're teaching in Jumpstart Coaching Lab, because clients are going to say a lot of things. And Steve Sims, one of my favorite authors, he talks about asking why three times, because that third why is when you really get to what they really want. And so preparing this generation is awareness of that, right? And understanding that you don't have to be, you know, start to finish a financial planner your whole life. You can start as a financial coach. You can sample different things along the way, depending on the type of people you work with. You know, I started at a hedge fund in the back office. I moved to real estate and took a break. I went back and got my 7 and 66 and built a book. The broker dealer went broke. I had to find a job and work for an RIA for 6 years and traded munis with, you know, the Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley's of the world. And then I started my own firm. So like I've sampled, if you will. And I tell people, don't be afraid to do that. That it's going to make you a better planner overall, because everybody won't be client facing. It's just not enough clients to go around. It's not enough people that everybody can have their own 100 clients. Like this, the world doesn't work like that. So.
Right. I totally get that. And I absolutely love the idea of sampling. And I think that there are many organizations like the FPA, Extranet, you know, internship. There are many opportunities to do that. And that word sampling is so right, because without seeing it, you probably don't know what to expect. And it really, there are so many other factors to it. All right, I wanted to watch the time a little bit.
Yeah.
This is a question that I get asked so many times as well, but I figure you probably talked about this better than I do. Tell us about RIA. How did you launch? And I know that there are so many mechanical things out of it. And you probably talked about this earlier. There are so many things you need to check before you get to this point. So give us just a high level of the difference between the RIA, being your own boss, and things like that.
Yeah. So shameless plug for my YouTube channel. There's a whole playlist on advice for existing financial professionals, in which I have a few videos in which I go into this in a little bit more detail than what I'm going to cover right here for time's sake. But
well, we'll at post the beginning, that in, we'll post that in within this video as well.
Okay, cool. So at a very high level, there are a couple of ways that you can enter this industry. You can go the SEC/FINRA route, or you can be independent. So I think the dividing line is whether you're going to be a registered representative of a broker dealer or whether you're going to be an independent advisor representative. So, obviously if you're going to be an independent advisor representative, you have to be one of a registered investment advisory firm. So those are the two hats that you can kind of go down. Now, probably the better value, rather than talking about how I started my firm, is deciding on which one makes the most sense for you. So there's way more seats on the bus with you being a registered representative, because everybody's a broker dealer, Schwab, Vanguard, Fidelity, the list goes on and on and on. And they hire tons of people every year. And so, but on the RIA side, you know, a big RIA can be considered managing 300 million in 400 or 500 households with, mm-hmm. you know, a staff of 20, but they're not going to be hiring 20 people every year. They might hire one or two people every couple of years. So although everybody wants to sit on that RIA side and fee only and fee based and all sorts of kind of stuff, there's a lot of great opportunities on the broker dealer side to get your feet wet and get experience and start talking to clients and figure out what this is like and all this other kind of stuff, and then move over. I think a lot of people shun those bank jobs, if you will, the, you know, Chases and all that kind of stuff. But those are actually really good programs. Just candidly, I was speaking to a friend with Morgan Stanley, and they have an exit program. They have a financial advisor development program that is 2 years paid. So now, yeah, you have to jump some hurdles to get in there. But like once you're in, they show you every part of the business and set you up with one of their teams. So you just have to do your research. You really have to do your research. I will go back to what we talked about earlier, Dr. Jen. It's not for the faint of heart to start your own firm. And there's not a lot of career opportunities because it's just a small amount of RIAs than there are broker dealers.
And I'm on the same page with you in terms of take advantage of big firms. I call them the big box store. They've got money and budget and resources to do that training. Go through that experience, get trained, get your feet wet, understand the industry based on that, and focus on where you want to go. Because through those training, you'll find your way into something. We just don't know what that is yet.
Well, what I would say, you're going to find probably a person, right? Like a mentor, a couple of mentors, right? And that's probably going to be valuable to you. So yeah, I agree totally.
Absolutely. Even a subgroups of that potentially. Mm-hmm. Now, so yeah. We've spent quite a bit of time talking about a lot of things. If you were to just give one advice for who is going to be new to this industry or career changers or already in the industry, what would that be if it's just one advice?
Anybody that's on this call that's in my group, they already know what I'm about to say. So it's my 9-letter framework, 3 words. Find your why, which will lead you to your who, which will inevitably lead you to your how. So everybody starting this industry, into this industry, or trying to get to the next level in this industry needs to know why they're doing this. Period, end of story, hard stop. You have to. This is one of the hardest, but greatly beneficial if you succeed, jobs, like fulfillment, financial rewards, the whole nine. But if you're a little lost on who you're trying to serve or why you're trying to serve them, it could be, you know, a little disconcerting to say the least. So you got to find your why. Get really centered and focused on that. When you find your why, it's going to lead you to a who, right? These mentors, these sponsors, these people that will come to the rescue and maybe coach, maybe a paid coach. But at the end of the day, these are people that you can look at the path that they took and you can avoid the mistakes they did through the advice or really the leadership or the mentorship they're showing you, right? They can be a hero. Like Seth Godin says that you don't have to meet all your heroes. Sometimes you can just, you know, read their books and see their stuff and you'd be like, oh, that's the way I'm going to go. And then mimicking or copying that will lead you to your how. It will give you a blueprint for how you should probably go about stuff. I had Nancy Langley Jones on my podcast several episodes back, and she wrote a book, So You Want to Be a Financial Planner. Excellent resource.
Right.
It's a $25 purchase. And if you don't read that thing cover to cover, you're doing yourself a disservice, because she's got story after story after story of people that have walked the same path as most people that pick up that book are walking. So it's just stuff like that to simplify the journey and to, you know, work smarter, not harder. So that would be my advice.
Thank you, Dom. That's very wise advice, right? Find your why and comes next your who, and then figure out the why, the how. That's thank you so much for doing that. We're so glad to have you in our Next Gen Mentoring Forum. What an incredible informative information. So thank you so much. I also wanted to just plug in a little bit about thank you for California Lutheran University School of Management Financial Planning Program for sponsoring today's Next Gen Mentoring Forum. California Lutheran University School of Management offers MBA in financial planning, helps financial advisor pursue leadership position and to grow their financial planning practice by deploying advanced financial planning techniques, effective communication, streamlined practice management, as well as leveraging that fintech. So if you or someone that you know that might benefit from the California Lutheran University MBA in Financial Planning Program, please have them sign up for our info session. And our next info session is actually on February the 24th at 3 p.m. Now, our next gen mentoring forum is on February the 8th, 2022 at 2 p.m. And many of you probably, if you don't know her already, I totally would invite you to come and join the session. Angela Rubifo, who has been a trailblazer for this industry, have won several awards representing women in this business. And we are going to talk about how does grit help financial professionals succeed in the financial services industry. And we look forward to having you soon. Be safe and be well. And thank you, Dom,